You're listening to the Talk Story Radio Network.
Welcome to another edition of Swoop's World, right here on the new Talk Story Radio Network. Swoop's World, where you get all you need to know about arts, culture, news, and happiness. Our number, if you want to give us a call tonight, is 562-912-3444. You can always email us at swoopsworld@gmail.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Once again, if you want to give us a call, that number is 562-912-3444. Now just sit back and enjoy another edition of Swoop's World on the new Talk Story Radio Network. Welcome to another edition of Swoop's World Primetime. I'm hearing something that's not really making any sense to me right now. I'll figure this out here in just a second. I think I had some kind of malfunction here. It's repeating. Anyway, we'll skip that. I'll jump out of there and move on to something else. Anyway, welcome back. How's it going, Peter?
It's going all right. We're still recovering a bit from last night's show, which was a good one. We had some good guests. Those two were really good.
Yeah, good times. Had a lot of fun. We had Steve Delamater in here playing his music and doing some really cool stuff with that.
Super talented.
Excellent. Yeah, we'll play some of his stuff during the breaks today. And then, of course, we had Angela Madsen. What a story there.
Yeah, that's... because in her situation, you guys... It's a long situation. You'd have to go listen to the archives or visit her site. But it would have been really easy just to fucking quit.
Oh.
Just to give it up.
Give it up, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just call it in, you know? Phone it in from there. I mean, if that. And instead, she's making the most of it. Traveling across oceans.
Yeah.
Single-handedly and with crews and Paralympics.
She said she took up the shot putting the javelin a year ago, and she set a world record like 3 weeks ago.
She's crazy, man. She's a hard worker, though, and she's willing to fight for what she wants to do. So totally got to, you know, got to respect those types of people who just don't let, they never say no, and they just don't let other people, like, define for them what they can or cannot do.
Right, and she's just amazing. So props go out to both Angela and Steve, and we want to thank them again for coming on the show and just providing us with it. It was just a great, great show last night. And, of course, we had plenty of beer to taste last night.
That was fun.
we had some from our regular sponsor, DrinksWineSpirits.com, and then our listener sponsors, Vegan Animal Killer, and they provided us with a couple good brews too. So great
very,
night,
very kind of both of those groups. Yes, we like that.
Yes, we do.
If anybody's listening, you know,
we'll work for beer.
We'll work for beer. We're not too proud to say it either. Just hit us up at Swoop's World. We'll work something out.
We're cheap dates. Oh, yeah, see, and you know, that extra beer kept us on, and a little bit later we stayed on about an extra 20 minutes last night. So
and that Dead Guy, that's good stuff, isn't it?
Dead Guy Ale was really good. I was really, you know, you had told me about it, and I never had it, but, you know, you and I are like spot on when it comes to what each other likes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I knew it was going to be good when you said it was good. But
the hazelnut was better than expected.
Okay.
So you had a little taste before me. I had very low expectations. So I can say that it was better.
I did set the bar pretty low.
You did, yeah. So, you know, it was better than expected.
You know what? I will say that because you know what? The time I tasted it, I took one sip. Now, you got to realize, I was drinking Smith's
oatmeal
stout, right? And then I tasted it the hazelnut that day.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, no, I'm going back to my oatmeal stout.
Right.
But last night when I had it, during the tasting, and I had more of a pour.
Yeah.
And drank a bunch of it. It was a lot better than I had remembered it.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I could drink that about once a year.
Well, and like my, I think would, you put that, cause I like to pair food with, beer or wine, and
it'd be great with some of the things you talked about for dessert.
Like a chocolate cake.
Yeah.
Pair that at the end.
Yeah.
It would totally work.
Look who's there, man. I just giving them props.
That's right. Yes.
That's awesome. But I could see real well where it make a great dessert beer. And you as a chef, I could see where you could use it to reduce something, reduce it down and do play around with it that way.
Sure. You could do all sorts of And even though it wasn't necessarily our favorite flavor, it was a well-made beer,
and I do
add flavorings to cover up some problems, so,
like pre-seasoned meat.
Exactly.
Well, today we're going to be talking about biking in Southern California, and for those of you who don't know, Peter is an outstanding cyclist, and I've ridden with him when I can keep up. He's a good guy. He'll slow down for people like me. But he's been riding bikes most of his life, and he's put down tens of thousands of miles, and he's got a book coming out later this year.
The schedule was September. I got a little behind, and then now they're a little behind because they're working on multiple books at once. So I haven't actually. I just uploaded literally a couple hundred files, and I haven't heard anything from them. Usually, I get an angst working on them. I've heard nothing for 2 or 3 weeks, so I'm thinking it might all get pushed a little back, a little further. But definitely by the end of the year.
So I'll say he's got a book.
The book will be done this year.
Got a book that's
when it comes
due to be out this year, called "Where to Bike Orange County." But tonight, man. I'm still in that fog from last night.
Yeah.
Today we're going to talk a little bit about where biking. Summertime's coming. A lot of kids on bikes. A lot of adults on bikes. A little bit about equipment, safety, and places of interest that would be cool to bike at. Why don't you get us started on that, man?
Well, I mean, cycling is booming right now. Obviously, as everyone. Can attest, and some places are more friendly about that than others. Long Beach, we're fortunate, is really cool about that. Done a lot of proactive stuff, put more bike paths and all that. So that's the first thing to know is you're starting off this sort of thing is where are you going to ride? The difference between that enjoying yourself and not enjoying yourself is all about choosing the right ride.
Right.
I was the guy back in the day before I had kids where I'd turn left onto a one-way street going the wrong way right down the middle of the road. That was fun. But that's not really what most people are into, and you got to know what's good for you. And if you're into urban rides, Long Beach is great stuff. If you want that 20 miles of heaven where there's no cars, no interaction, you want a bike path that's dedicated to bikes, there's some great places in Orange County. Really off the top of my head, I think of the Bolsa Chica bike path that goes from Bolsa Chica Sunset Beach all the way to Newport Beach, really.
Yeah.
And that's 20 miles. That's one of the rides in the book. And then another one along those lines is in Newport's got one. And then Irvine is, they get a lot of bad rap for being a bit conformist and cookie cutter. But I'll tell you what, all the rides I did in there were awesome. They have paths that you can ride for literally 40 miles. And occasionally you have to cross a road, but it's car free. So, knowing what you like, if you like the urban environment, you want to, downtown Long Beach, they got the bike, what do they call them? The bike?
Bikeways.
Bikeways, they call them. And you're totally in traffic, but there are bike signals. For some people, that's a daunting sort of thing. And then, are you traveling with kids or not? Huge thing. Find the safe. The thing is, you always want to find the safest, most enjoyable route. I live here kind of close to Cherry. And I see people riding. I have literally seen two deaths on that road. I mean, not witnessed them, but arrived shortly thereafter for cyclists. And, it's not a road. The city's not even trying to make it bike friendly. It's not. You should. And all you have to do is ride one block in. Instead of riding down Cherry, ride like one kind of city block in, and you're riding down Walnut. Or even Orange, both of which are much more. And on a bike, if you're trying to get there fast, then you're probably doing something wrong, because that's not what the bike's necessarily about.
Right.
It's about efficient, but not necessarily fast. Ride the one extra block inland, you know, and take the safer, more enjoyable route. And that's, you know, that's the number one mistake a lot of people make, is they ride, you know, in the wrong thing, based on either their skill level or who they're riding with.
Right.
Nothing is more nerve-wracking than taking your kids on a ride, and then all of a sudden you're on a road that you're like, holy shit, they just not be, you know, they're swerving everywhere, and you're like, panic. So, you know, plan things out. You know, there's books like the one I'm producing out there. There's guides, lots more guides, you know, and look at maps. There's most of the maps nowadays, especially like digital maps, OCTA, Orange County Transit Authority, They have a great map that shows you all the different map, all the different bike lanes, and they show you what kind of bike lanes. Class 1, Class 2, Class 3, Class now, 1.
The classes are...
The Class 1 is, you know, dedicated bike, no cars. And then Class 2 is an on-street bike lane. And then Class 3 is, it's designated a bike lane, but there's no actual paint on the ground or anything like that. And sometimes those are safe, too, because they're through like residential streets, so they don't paint the line, but there's also slow moving traffic.
Right.
So you got to know where you're going. And if you're riding with kids or something like that, especially, drive part of the route. You know, check it out. Make sure it's what it looks like. Plan. And then if you're a commuter, same thing. Figure out where's the safest place to get on and off. Our secretary was her husband was going to ride from Seal Beach to Cypress, because that's where he works. He lives in Seal Beach, Cypress. And he was going to go up, I forget what street, and I was like, yeah, tell him to go up the San Gabriel River and get off at such and such exit. And he'd been doing the other ride, and he's like, oh my God, that's so much more pleasant. Yeah, it added about 2 miles, which, you know, was about 10 minutes. But if he was trying to get to work quick,
he'd
be driving. So take the extra 10 minutes,
right?
Ride the safer route.
You know, I notice that when I ride... When I ride by myself, say we're going to go to where we meet for coffee lots of times.
Mm-hmm.
If I ride by myself, I just ride up that street.
Undisclosed location.
Yeah, undisclosed location. I just ride up that street. But if I ride my son, you know, then even though he's 15, he still scares the shit out of me when he rides a bike.
Yeah.
I do.
Sudden stops or left turns.
Yeah, I do. And I look back and he's weaving and cars are coming. So
checking his iPod. Buddy.
Exactly.
Oh, no,
his
headphones, crazy shit.
iPod, all kinds of crazy stuff. So I just go up 2 blocks. There's a street there. It's got a bike lane, you know, all the way up. So we go out of the way about 2 blocks. And I feel a lot more comfortable doing that than just kind of taking him out there. You know, now we have done the other ride, but it just kind of makes me really nervous. So.
And again, know your times, too, because what's a perfectly safe ride at whatever, Saturday morning, could be the most dangerous ride in the world Friday morning at... Or Friday afternoon, or whatever.
Exactly.
You know, it's more than just say, and that's the thing, if we have that car mentality. We get in the car, it's a road, we drive it. You got to be a little more proactive or thoughtful in your bike routes and when.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because we talk about the Sherrows down through Belmont Shore.
Yeah.
Now, if you drive through Belmont Shore Monday through Friday, just about any time of day, especially in the afternoon, when there's somebody riding those Sherrows, I go, man, this is so dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
If you drive through there at 9 o'clock in the morning or 10 o'clock in the morning on a weekend, it's wide open. I mean, you know, you literally could take your, depending on your kid's ability, kids right down those Sherrows right through Belmont Shore, you know,
nobody
Saturday,
be honking,
Sunday morning.
Nobody be on your
exactly,
ass.
Exactly,
right.
Exactly. But you're right. That street, unless you're, you know, an experienced bike rider, I wouldn't advise me riding that Monday through Friday. You know, during the
well, especially
of the
yeah, and then there's those times like you go through there. If you get there after the rush in the morning, but before the dinner, the lunch rush, you got windows. You got to just know. You got to be thinking about those sorts of things, and always have a plan B. You know, if you can. Sometimes you just get stuck somewhere. You're like, wow, we screwed up. But, you know, plan ahead is usually a huge part of it. Knowing the route ahead of time is huge. you.
Well, you know, when, before you get to that point, talk a little bit about preparation and equipment. And, you know, and I have a couple questions just general knowledge for myself. But for anybody who's, like, you know, like I said, summertime's coming up and you want to, you know, the kids, they've been riding a little bit, or even if you got vacation time, you want to go out and ride and stuff, what kind of preparation should you make before you even start looking at what routes to ride?
Well, the two most important things to worry about are your brakes, number one. I mean, I know that sounds so stupid, but you'd be amazed how I've led rides, like for my son's groups or whatever, and people show up and they can't stop. either A, because they don't know how, right? Because they're on a bike that they're unfamiliar with,
right?
Or B, because the bike is out of tune. It's there's something wrong with the brake. Like in one case, this one kid showed up. He had two hand brakes. The left one didn't work. Like he's squeezing it.
Yeah, but
I'm
happening.
Looking, and then the calipers that pinch on the rim to stop it are not. They're not closing. Yeah. So he's basically working with one brake, which, you know, maybe you can get away with that, but is it the front brake or the back brake? And how well is that one working? And how aware are you of the difference?
Right.
And so, you know, most bike shops will tune your bike. If it's just, you know, like a basic tune-up, adjust the things. Maybe you have to change in a cable or so. Somewhere in the $60 to $80 range. If you store your bike indoors, you'll probably need to have your bike tuned once a year. Grand scheme of things, that's tiny. You know, for some people, that's a hardship, perhaps. But a lot of that stuff you can also do yourself. It's not too hard to do a lot of that stuff. Pick up a basic book manual, how to do basic bike maintenance manual. It's just really hard. The hardest part is oftentimes it requires kind of like a specialized tool.
Right.
And that kind of adds up sometimes. But once you have the tool, I mean, I do a lot of my basic stuff. I don't change out cables because it's so tedious. I'd rather pay someone else to do it. But, you know, I true my tires and all that. So, brakes are the most important thing. And the second thing is your tires. You know, again, it seems pretty obvious, but anything that's so important that everything is resting on it, it's important.
Have you seen some tires in some people's cars?
Yeah, and that's the same thing. Bike, I mean, the thing that most people make the mistake, more than anything else I've ever noticed, is their tires are inflated to the incorrect pressure.
Right.
And almost always they're underinflated. Because if you're overinflated, your tires will explode. You know, they'll literally pop. So that's usually, you don't usually see too many people with that problem because they have enough house.
Exactly. They know it the moment it happens.
But for two reasons. So one is if your tire is underinflated, then you have two problems. The first problem is, the bike doesn't handle it. You'll feel like a kind of like a mushy sliding.
Right.
And when you have to brake, then basically like the rubber doesn't. It's not effective. It's not gripping the ground. Or when you have to turn at high speeds, you can literally be thrown from the bike because the tire will curve under. It'll wrap and you'll get flipped. And then so that's the number one problem with underinflated tires. And the number two problem is that it's just a lot more work. You know, the more resistance you have,
right,
the slower you go or the harder it is to pedal. And by not keeping your tires inflated, the correct thing, you've increased the amount of effort just by a ton. And then another along those lines, having the right tire for the right ride.
Right.
You see people buy mountain bikes because they want to sit upright. They have mountain bike tires on there, and then they're riding on the beach path. It's like, again, you're just working hard.
Overworking.
And if that's your goal, because some people do that because they want the extra exercise. Right. But assuming that you want to move as efficiently as possible, get a pair of slicks on there. You know, don't buy the mountain bike. Buy the hybrid bike that has that sort of upright position, but is geared more towards riding, you know, on city streets or bike paths or whatever. Making sure your air is correct will oftentimes, especially for kids, is oftentimes the difference between an enjoyable ride and a miserable ride. And nobody, especially for kids, and you don't want to hear them go, "I'm tired, it's no fun." And it literally can add, they've done studies, like properly inflated tires can add something like 20% efficiency. When you're the engine, 20% efficiency is really a lot. I mean, that's a lot for your car, right? I mean,
right.
20% in gas prices, you'd be like, "Wow, I just saved $20, right?" Or, well, whatever, $10. You saved a bunch of money, you know. So make sure that that's a huge thing.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't realize, too, is that different tires on different bikes require a different amount of pressure.
Yep.
So they just, right on the side of the tire, it tells you how much.
It tells you how much. And if you don't have, first of all, it's money well spent, you know, to get a pump with a gauge. Those will usually run you around $40 or $50. If you can't afford that, your local bike shop, especially if you've gone in there more than once, they'll generally do that for free.
Yeah.
You know, because they'll say, well, he came in here to get his tire, and then when he's got a flat tire and needs a repair, he'll come in here to buy something. The smaller, especially the smaller mom and pop type places, that's their bread and butter. They're going to win you over, not on prices, because they can't compete with the big guys. They're going to win you over on service, and they'll do that for free. And often they'll look at your bike and they'll go, well, you know, maybe I could throw a little grease on the chain, because that's another thing, efficiency.
Right.
So pop in there. A lot of times you'll get like the little hand me out freebies in the hopes that they'll get more. And if they don't, go somewhere else, because there's
plenty of them out there.
Yeah, there's plenty of them out there now. So, you know.
Now, when it comes to saddles, some people refer to seats, saddles, whatever. There's so many out there. There's some that are really, really thick, really wide. There's some that have no padding on them. And you know what? If you talk to, because I've talked to several people in the bike shop about them, and everybody gives you a different answer. Because everybody, you know, they say, well, if you're riding this kind of bike where you don't put so much, you're not using the surface area, you can go with this. If you're having problems with this, go with the split down the middle. You know, there's so many different to choose from. But for somebody who's kind of a recreational rider, what do they do? I mean, I know the one answer. Well, whatever feels best. But, you know, when you're first going out there looking around, what should they be looking for?
Well, the number one mistake most people make in that regard is they figure soft is better. You know, a soft, mushy seat is better. Yeah. And that's generally not true. You don't want something really soft, because eventually your ass is on there and it gets soft ones. There's lots of cushioning, so you end up with lots of moisture. Bad. It's not somewhere you want a lot of moisture. And then the other thing is, eventually that foam stuff breaks down and it actually becomes harder. Yeah. And it hurts. People who ride a lot, they ride what would be really considered a hard saddle. Really, like, when you first hit, you're like, ouch, that would hurt.
Yeah.
You get used to it as part of it. But also part of it is you wear padding. Wear the padding in the shorts.
Right.
You know, don't put the padding on the seat. So somewhere in between there lies the perfect for each person. And generally speaking, you want something firm that has some padding, some cushioning, or suspension. Like I ride, one of my bikes I ride, Brooks Saddle. Mm-hmm. And they were actually originally saddle makers for horses. They produce horses, you know, horse saddles. And so that's their style. And what they've done is they've basically suspended this piece of leather over a frame. And so eventually, just like with horse saddles, the saddle takes on your unique butt shape.
Yeah.
And it's the most comfortable seat I've ever had. You know, it's awesome. The first 100 miles was a bit sore.
Like Birkenstocks.
Like Birkenstocks. You gotta rake them in. You know, you just gotta know which one. For the casual rider, there's that in-between. You don't want something that hard, but you don't want something mushy. And it should be firm enough to support you, so that when you sit on it, it doesn't hurt. But at the same time, it shouldn't be mushy. And then shape is relative. Like I was once shopping for a saddle, trying to find a comfort, because I had gotten a new bike and just hated the one that was on there. It literally just hurt.
Yeah.
And this guy was like, he pointed out, I said, that's my favorite saddle right there. It was actually a women's saddle.
Yeah.
And he borrowed his saddle's broken, so he borrowed his girlfriend's saddle or something like that. And it was a woman's saddle. And he's like, it was the perfect fit for him. And he's like, swore by it. And he's like, so you just never know.
Yeah.
You know, they say this is perfect for men who are blah, blah, blah. At the end of the day, it's what works for you. And since it's where, you know, you touch the bike and, you know, your feet, your hands, and your ass.
Right.
Those places should all be comfortable. But some need to be more comfortable than others.
Exactly.
And your ass is it. And if you find, like, I'm liking the bike and I'm able to ride and all that, but I'm always a certain amount of saddle soreness is normal, especially if you're just starting out and haven't been on a bike in a while. That you're just going to have to work through that. That's
right.
Like any sort of physical activity. You haven't jogged in for a while, your knees are going to be sore. Everybody's got the... If you get past that basic saddle soreness and you're still sore, or you're numb.
Numb's not a good thing.
For you guys out there, that's not a good thing.
That's
that means
a bad
you need
sign.
A new saddle, or you need your saddle adjusted correctly. Right. There's also tilt and angle. So that's where going into your local mom-and-pop shop and saying, look, this is what I'm experiencing. They can say, okay, that's probably a bad saddle for you. Or, like, I think you had a problem with that for a while where it wasn't comfortable. And I was like, and I looked at your thing, wrong. I was like, that looks like a wrong angle for you. And we lowered it, and I think it turned out to be a good saddle for you. So you're still using it, right?
Still using it.
So for guys who cycle a lot, there's the saddle that has the missing, the in-between
the
part.
Split.
The split. And that's probably a good thing. You know, it helps to release pressure on those parts of the body. You don't want pressure applied over long periods of time. You get, you know, erectile dysfunction is probably the two worst words in the English language.
Especially when you put them together.
Put it together, man. That is a bad thing. And if you're going to ride a lot, that's probably worth, you know, investment. A good saddle like that will cost you probably closer to $100. But if you've reached the point where you can... you're riding that much, that's money well spent.
Not only that, when you talk about that, I've run into a couple places recently where you can test saddles.
Yes.
You put a deposit down on a saddle, and you can ride it for however long you want, and then when you return it, if you don't buy a saddle, they keep the $25 or whatever it was.
So basically a rental fee.
Yeah, and if you purchase a new saddle, they apply it towards the saddle. So
yeah.
you can test ride.
There's a number of places that are starting to do that, and they're seeing the value of it because, you know, people are willing to spend the money, but you really, I was reluctant for years to spend that kind of money because, you know, it was like, that's a bunch of money to find out that, wow, this is the most uncomfortable saddle in the world.
Yeah.
You don't know. So a lot of times you live with one that's less comfortable because you know it, well, at least I know what that is.
Right.
And I don't have the $100. So yeah, that's great. And again, mom and pop stores are usually the ones that have those programs. Not mom and pop, but, you know, the little stores, as opposed to, like, Sports Chalet, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's definitely advisable, definitely a way to go. And there are so many different shapes out there that you'll be able to find one. And that's the other way to do it, too, is you have friends that cycle, ride one of their bikes, you know, or switch out a saddle if they're cool with that.
I tell you, the one you have on, in light of the story we heard about the bike thieves, the one you have on that black bike you have, your newest bike, because when I rode it around that park, that's a nice saddle.
That's a very nice saddle. Surprisingly, that came with the bike. It wasn't usually one of the first things I change on a bike is the saddle.
Yeah.
But that one was a good saddle. It was very comfortable. And I've ridden most of the book on that bike, so it's. Whatever that is, a few thousand miles.
That's the first thing I noticed
because
I jumped off my bike and jumped on your bike. Wow.
Yeah. So when you're talking equipment, bikes can be expensive, but they don't have to be.
Right.
You know, there are lots of cheap bikes out there. Craigslist is a great way to buy some cheap bikes that are still older bikes that were, you know, like I have my Cannondale. First bike I bought, it was like top of line bike at the day. That was 20 years ago. I've seen that bike available for $200 or $300. If that's been well maintained, that is a steal because that bike can still compete. My son rides it, and before I got my new bike, I was riding it. I was blowing past people on that bike. And so you can find good deals. The best rule of thumb is to buy the best bike in your range, but don't overbuy.
Right.
You know, especially if you're just starting out. Buy a bike that you're comfortable on and talk to the person. Tell them what type of riding you're going to do. You know, because people go out and they get railroaded into this or that, and because it looks cool or because it's the coolest thing. Nobody, you don't need any exotic. Don't buy a carbon fiber bike for your first bike. I mean, that's just, it's...
I'm going to race around the neighborhood.
I don't even own one of those, you know? Basically, you know, probably stick with either aluminum or steel. Those are the two most common, and you can get great bikes. And buy, you know, what you can afford, but by knowing what you're going to do,
right?
You know, because that's the thing you see a lot of times. You see people, they bought bike for the wrong thing. Like I said, the guy who wants to ride the mountain bike, because that's what I rode back in the 80s. And it's like, mountain bikes today are a whole different breed. And they really are only meant
to ride
on the mountains.
Yeah.
You know? Whereas there's a whole range of hybrids. If you're commuting, buy a bike that comes with brazons that allow you to put saddlebags. Because if you're going to commute, you don't want to wear a backpack.
Right.
That's just so uncomfortable. You're going to get all sweaty. have your stuff in saddlebags, and then have something that has fenders on it. It doesn't rain a lot here, but even if you wake up early and there's dew on the ground, it's a wet ground, you're going to want fenders that when you get to work, you don't have, you know, it's rooster tail up your ass.
It's funny you mention that, because when I bought my hybrid, it didn't come with fenders. I had to, you know, I bought aftermarket fenders from the same company that made the bike, I believe. But, you know, they've never been on, and I did a pretty good job, I think, but they've never have set on their, I don't think, the most efficient way.
Right.
Or had they been done, you know, put on at the factory or something like that, or if it wouldn't have been an aftermarket set. But, and I'm happy with them. But,
right.
But you're right, because when I've ridden before on wet ground,
yeah,
you know, you get the little splash.
Yeah.
And with those little bitty fenders.
It's amazing how effectively those can cut. And if you're commuting, then that's important. Showing up to work, not covered in gunk.
That was another question that I was going to ask about. You know, when we start talking about you know, you're talking about the padding. Put the padding in your wardrobe, right? And,
yeah.
You know, you see a lot of people riding around in jeans and stuff like that. But what if you're a commuter? I mean, because, you know, a lot of commuters, they get, you know, they don't have time to get to work and then change and stuff like that. So they kind of have to wear to work what they're going to wear at work. What do you suggest?
Well, commuting is, there's two ideas on the commuting, and one is it all has to do with distance. So if you're going long distances, you're going to want to be in the bike gear, because the bike gear looks silly, but it actually serves a purpose. It keeps you from getting hot and sweaty. More importantly, it keeps you from getting chaffed in places you don't want to get chaffed. I can't think of any place you'd want to get chaffed, but there's some places that are worse than others. So, if the distance is such that you have to ride that bike, riding those clothes, then you're going to want to work something out. Maybe there's a gym nearby you can join, or maybe the building you're in has showers you can shower when you get there and switch out. And, you know, distance is relative for everybody. I can ride 20 miles. I ride 20 miles in normal clothes, and I'm fine. For some people, that'd be killer, right? So it just depends. 60 miles, I'm in my Lycra. So it all depends. So you got to know what distance you can do. So with that being said, if you're traveling those shorter distances, you know, say a 5 mile one way, 5 mile home, 10 miles altogether, they have a lot of breathable fabric type stuff that looks, it's not suits. So if you got to wear a suit, that's a whole other matter.
Right.
But let's say you can work somewhere where it's like business casual. Places like REI, Sports Chalet, and those places, especially REI, are carrying a lot of that stuff. And I've even seen it making its way into some of the smaller bike shops where they're wearing, there's clothes that, they look like they're denim or they're cotton-type shirts, but they're actually like microfiber stuff.
Right.
And it lets you breathe so you're not all hot and sweaty when you get there. And they, wool, wool's in it, like the fine, what's that called, the Merino wool. Light enough to ride in a bike, but it won't hold moisture and it doesn't stink, you know. There are options out there, and that's a great way to go. And that way, you're, you know, you're not... You're showing up, you look good enough to work, and then you're still on the bike. So that's there are a lot more options. And then the bike again is a big part of that. Riding the right bike. If you're in like a racing bike, I ride a Cannondale, the Cad 10, it's just an all-out racer. It's an awesome bike. You know, you couldn't, if you wore your pants and stuff, you're going to get that cut in the chain. So knowing, again, when you buy your bike, make sure you're wearing the right... You're telling the guy what you want to do with it, or whoever's helping you, what you want to do with it, so they can get the right bike. And if you... They have a lot of companies out there just pure commuters. You know, they have guards on the chain, so you keep that out. They're more upright. They have the saddlebags, like you're saying. They have the fenders. Things like that will allow you to be more... able to wear that type of clothing and commute to work.
The highly fluorescent safety type wear. What do you recommend? Most people don't wear it. You do see a lot of people wear it, and most of the times I see people wear it, they're obviously commuters. But you know, especially with kids and stuff like that, what do you suggest?
You know, bright clothes is a good thing for sure. I don't wear the fluorescent stuff, but again, it's also knowing where you are. Are you going to be riding on the bike paths? You probably don't need that. Are you going to be riding some like crazy three lanes of traffic, you know, flow of traffic and all that? Something bright, is not a bad idea. I do have an orange. It's not like day glow. It's not, but it's an orange jacket that I wear for like on colder days, and that, you know, helps me stand out. So knowing where you're riding is a big part of that. For kids, a lot of kids will resist that sort of stuff. You know, they do it because it's not cool. Which is fine. You know, I just make sure my son's wearing, like, you know, something red or something. You know, something bright is a big part of it. And then just know where you are.
Yeah.
And that, they've gotten stylish with that stuff too, man. You can get some good-looking, brightly colored stuff that doesn't even necessarily look bicycle. You know, and then have the other hardcore stuff that's like, you know, Euro stuff too. So it just depends what you want to do. But something bright is always good. And then along those lines, know when you're traveling. Come summer, you got long days. Come winter, you know, make sure your reflectors are on your bike. Get a light, you know, especially as tail light. A blinking tail light is super important. I don't usually use a front light because I find that messes up my night vision. But some people do. But I like, they have a whole bunch of things like that where you can put them around your wheel, or like inside the on the axle.
Right.
It creates like a little circle, you know, and that's great. Just anything to help.
See.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, kids, you know, having reflectors are not cool. Right? They're just not cool. So they always take off those things. And, you know, during the day, a reflector doesn't do any good unless it's a cloudy day. If they're at all going to be riding in the dusk and at night, or if you are, you know, make sure the reflectors are on there, and definitely...
Sometimes you just have to be a parent, right?
Yeah, totally. And then if you're a commuter, you know that, okay, it's summer, we're moving into winter time. The days are going to get shorter. Time has changed. I'll be riding home at 5 o'clock, and it'll be dark. Wear something brighter, and then, you know, get those safety lights on there.
Yeah.
All that stuff that's the thing about cycling. It is a bit of a... It costs a bit to get into. Once you're into it, once you have the basic, the bike, you know, whatever lighting gear you need, or if you're a commuter, whatever bags you need, after that, you can save so much money. I mean, you're saving in gas, you're going to the doctor less, right? Unless you're crashing. but, you know, you can crash in your car, right?
Yeah.
you know, you're going to be healthier, everything's, it's a positive lifestyle change. It is a little bit to get in. You don't need it all at once. That's the mistake a lot of people make with this, is like, you know, they got to go and they got to spend $5,000 to get everything. It's like, you can get a good bike for $400, $500. You can get a great bike. I mean, I ride a top-of-the-line bike, and I spent $1,800. Seriously, I blow past people that have spent 5 or 6 times as much.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you're the engine.
Right.
You need a bike of a certain level. If you've got $300 or $400, you can get a decent bike. If you've got $1,000 to spend, you can get an awesome bike.
And and if you know a little bit, or if you have somebody you can rely on as far as tune-ups and everything, like a nice shop and everything, you can actually get yourself a great bike on Craigslist for very little money.
Yes.
Because what you know, you find a lot of times, and then we're going to take a quick break, but a lot of times you'll find people who are the next best thing kind of person.
Yeah.
I used to work with a guy like this. He'd buy top-of-the-line stuff. He'd have it for 6 months to a year, and now the new edition's out, and he just wants to get rid of it. He didn't even try to get rid of it at what it's worth. He just wants to get rid of it so he can get the next best thing, you know, to free up space to get the next best thing.
Yep.
And guys like that are a dime a dozen on Craigslist.
Yeah.
So... you listen to Swoop's Road on the Talk Story Radio Network. It's Swoop's Road Prime Time on a Thursday afternoon. We're going to take a quick break and be back after this.
I see you come around, kick shuffling on the ground. Shades cap mind in the gaps, yet you don't make a sound. Chasing what you might love, wondering what you're thinking of. Dazed and crazed, but not phased when push comes to shove. Seems they got nothing to say while you just keep turning gray. We all just bouncing trouts, guessing how we got here anyway. Riding along the strand with something written on your hand. 2 feet too far to see, tonight's totalitarian. We are comets, we are ghosts. Don't mean to be uptight. I just thought I'd remind you to confide in where you can abide in. Share just what's new and congruent to things you're construing. No, don't leave me grooving out here on this pier, lest I veer down to Murano, where I'll write you letters set in stained glass bottles or pants you used to coddle. Shakes and coughs, they come when you're not here to stop. Whoa, no. I used to walk around and make you frown, and then I'd watch you glow. We are comets, we are ghosts. Fortune finds us when we're
welcome back to Swoops World, primetime on the Talk Story Radio Network. Hey, just a reminder to all our regular listeners and musicians and things and such, we have two new pages on the SwoopsWorld.com. One is called hashtag SwoopsWorld, and if you use Instagram and you take pictures of Instagram and you want them to go on our stream, all you have to do is hashtag on SwoopsWorld, and it'll end up on our stream, and you'll see, I think there's like 20 that show at all times or something like that, 10 or 15, whatever it is, but it'll show up in our stream, and we'll know that you were thinking about us wherever you were. And also, we have a new events calendar page. So if you have an event, show, a performance, it's geared towards comedy, music, spoken word, theatrical performances, things like that. But also any charitable events, just go on there and you got to register for the site. But it's super easy. It takes you like less than 5 minutes. From beginning to end to list an event on our events page, and it'll go up within 24 hours. So we want everybody to make use of that. It's all free of charge.
For now.
And knock yourselves out, man.
Only because we haven't figured out how to take your money yet.
Yeah. Once again, it's our goal to help our local independent artists, musicians, and entertainers, whatever. Back to we're talking about biking. And so, you know, we kind of covered a lot. You know, Thursday shows are really light. Compared to Wednesday shows, it's just mellow. It's just two of us. It's, you know, it's only an hour long. And usually we make it 50 minutes.
Yeah.
But you covered a lot. And one of the things I wanted to ask is, you know, cause you've kind of you got your bike. You've got some clothing that's comfortable for you. You've kind of looked into where you want to ride. What other type of things should you have? I mean, now that you have those things in set, are there any other things that you should have or need?
Well, definitely. I mean, the helmet was the first thing. I didn't wear helmets for many of my first of my tens of thousands of miles.
Until you had a baby, right?
And then I had the kids, and I'm like, all right, I got to be safe. And, you know, I've been pretty fortunate. I haven't had too many crashes. But that being said, you just never know what's going to happen. Especially with your kids, you don't want to take the chance. They're, you know, they have done studies. The helmets, they look silly, absolutely. Nobody looks good in a bike helmet. Just live with that. It's not about looking good. It's about being safe. So get the helmet. Get them with, you know, they have all the certifications. I forget what they're called. But you'll get one that's
it
certified.
It says so on the inside.
You don't go buy the hockey helmet because that is useless, you know. Get a real bike helmet. And they have different styles and colors. Get something that, you know, or put stickers on it, whatever. And wear it. More importantly, wear it correctly. Make sure it's buckled. Because
oh my gosh, I don't know how many times I've talked to my kid. I said I'm riding alongside him, and the buckle's hanging, and the thing's kind of tilted back. And I'm like, dude, buckle your helmet.
Buckle the helmet, and make sure it's cinched tight enough.
Exactly.
That when you shake your head, it moves a little bit, but it doesn't kind of fall off. Because otherwise, it's just a waste of time.
That was last time we went, right?
Yeah.
I went up to him, and I just pushed his helmet off his head.
Right.
Because I could see it was just hanging right under here.
Right. You know, that's... Because that in that instance, you're probably actually doing yourself a disservice. It's probably going to hurt you now.
Yeah.
You know, so get the helmet, wear it correctly. Gloves are optional. I wear gloves just because it's just they add a little bit of padding. They're more comfortable. Your hands get sweaty. Gives you a better grip.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the basics as far as, like, what to put on your body. As far as what to put on your bike, you know, we've talked about if you're a commuter, you wear fenders. At night, you wear light. You have to put lights on there. But some things that we haven't talked about are things to carry on, like in a bike pack or whatever, if you're wearing a backpack in your backpack. Know how to take off. Know how to change a tire. I mean, if you don't know how to do much on a bike, but you know how to change a tire, that's you're good.
No AAA for bikes?
No. Well, it might be now, but it's not worth it. Because Murphy's Law will always be in effect. You will never get a flat tire 100 yards from your house. You will always get a flat tire at the furthest distance in your ride from your home. And if you're lucky, you won't be stranded. I mean, I've had my bike break down where I was out in the desert, 30 or 40 miles away from anywhere. A chain broke, so there wasn't really much I could do about it. Fortunately, somebody came by. I could have cooked to death out there. It was horrible. But
and fortunately, it wasn't like a hatchet murder.
Right, yeah, totally.
Okay, bye.
Yeah. But, you know, it would really suck to ruin your whole day. All you got was a flat tire.
Yeah.
I mean, certain brakes, you're not going to be able to do anything about. Flat tire, anybody can do. They're easy to repair. So first, you got to know how your tires come off. There's quick release, obviously, that you knew with your hands. But if you, I've seen people who are like, oh, I have a patch kit. I have a pump. But I can't get my tires off, my wheels off, because they need a crescent wrench or something to release the bolts,
right.
Unscrew the bolts. So know how to get the tire off. Know how to change the tire. I have the and all that stuff's cheap. I mean, you can get a whole patch kit is like $1.50. The levers you need to take the tire off, about $3.
Right.
And then a new inner tube, about $5. You buy it all, put it in a pack, attach the pack to your bike, the little, you know, and then it's always there. And then you don't have to forget about it. Worry about you forgetting about it. So make sure you know how to do that. When it comes to inflating the tire, there's two routes to go. And I, for a long time, used the hand pump.
Dude, what you have now, I'm going to get one of those.
Yeah.
That beats the shit out of hand pumping.
Yeah. So now what I use is a CO2 canister. It's like those that people use for the
whipped cream
thing. Yep. Yeah. And you need the special adapter that attaches to the canister, and then it fits multiple types of bikes. As far as you have different kinds of pumps, valves, Schrader or Presta are the two different kinds of valves. It fits both. You just screw it on there, open it, CO2 goes in there. Make sure you have two CO2 canisters on hand, just in case, you know, and that's a little more expensive, but it's still cheaper than a hand pump.
Yeah.
I think the CO2 canisters cost you about $2, $3.
You can buy them right there at Smart and Final.
Yeah, okay.
They come in a box.
Yeah, and they take up almost no space. And then you'll need either a hand pump if you're not going to do that route. Not usually a decent hand pump is going to cost you $25, $30. This little contraption, I don't even know what it's called, for the CO2 valve is $12, $15. So it's actually a cheaper route to go, and it takes up less space.
Yeah.
So whichever route you decide to go, do that. And then know how to change the tire. And then probably the only other thing I can really think of that is really useful is a water bottle cage. And you can put any kind of water bottle in it.
Right.
But if you want to buy they have the nicer ones that will help keep it cold. And that's nice for when you're doing the longer rides. Bring you some Gatorade or you can water, whatever. Bring hydrate. Staying hydrated is obviously important. And depending on where you're going, you might need more. You might need to pack some with you if you're heading out to, you know, the desert sort of thing, or you're going somewhere and you know that you're not going to, again, it goes back to knowing where you're riding.
Right.
You're riding along the beach paths, you can stop and get water anywhere. You don't need that. But, so that's a possibility. And if you have those basic things, you could really enjoy. If you want to get a little more into the technical, so you can get like an all-purpose tool, Allen wrench, because almost all bikes now are using Allen,
mm-hmm.
what's that, what they're called? Allen.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the metrics, Allen right. stuff. And because almost all the parts on your bike now are that, with the exception of those who have bolts on their wheels.
Right.
Then you'll need to. I usually carry on crescent wrenches because that gives me options.
You can use crescent wrench, and there's that. There's also the one tool you'll find. It's got like a. It's made like a T,
mm-hmm.
and each end is a different size.
Yeah, yeah. So whatever, just make sure it fits your bike before you head on out. Obviously, those are useful. And the Allen wrench one is really nice because oftentimes adjusting your handlebars or your seat, that's what you need. And if you had that basic stuff, you could fix probably 90% of the things you're likely to have, at least to get you going.
Right.
You know, you like I said. I had an instance where my chain broke. I mean, I was screwed. Nothing I could do with that. Right. I'd have to carry an extra chain. But that's the rare exception. If you've maintained the bike, the things that are most likely to go is a seat adjustment, flat tire, simple things that you can probably do on the go, and then, take it in. Sometimes your cables will get stretched. Those are going to need to be replaced. You can do that. Like I said, to me, that's just a pain in the ass. I pay for someone to do that. It's money well spent. And if I keep all my stuff in the garage, that's another thing. Store your bike indoors. It doesn't have to be in your house, but indoors.
Out of the elements.
Out of the elements. Because it's all metal. And obviously, that's going to lead to the rusting and all that. And that's it. I mean, the bike is incredible. I have bikes that I have had for over 20 years and I'm still riding.
Yeah.
So you take care of the bikes, it's way more. I mean, can't say about too many cars you own, and it's cost me next to nothing, in maintenance compared to a car. And
right.
So we talk about, they are a little more expensive sometimes to get going, $400,000, but you take care of that bike, you can literally ride. I estimate that on the Cannondale that I still own, I have ridden over 50,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
Maybe more than that. I don't even know. But at least that much. Yeah. So, when the Cannondale I'm currently on, I've owned it for just about a year now, I've already put about 5,000 miles on. Yeah. So, these things are really, even the twitchy, high-tech stuff, are still really durable. You buy that kind of, the ones that meant for the commuters, those things, as long as you don't leave it in the rain, are going to probably outlast you.
Yeah.
I mean, they're made of steel.
Exactly.
They're steel framed. So.
Well, as we wrap up here, one of the things you mentioned, and I think I would suggest, that not only do you have the things so you can fix a flat or thing like that, know your bike, and you might want to test taking it apart, taking your tire off and stuff like that before you need to. Because
yes.
A lot of people don't realize that a lot of the bikes, you have to release the brakes.
Yes.
To get the tire off.
Yeah.
And I've seen people like, and you're like, dude, just release your brakes so that you can get the tire off.
Yeah, no, and if you don't know how, pick up a book.
Yeah.
YouTube has lots
of
useful things about how to, and then there's I forget the name of the site, Sheldon's Bike Maintenance. It's a little, it's a very dry page, but tons and tons of useful information on there. And then you just don't want to deal with that. Take it into the shop and ask them. That, again, they're looking long term. They want your business. They want you to come back to buy the parts and stuff. They'll show you how to do it. They may not go step by step, but they'll show you how to release the brakes. What do you exactly you would need to do? That's a good point. Is don't wait till you have that problem on the road when you're hot and sweaty. You're sitting on the curb,
pissed off.
do that at home at least once, just so you know how it works.
Exactly. Very, very informative stuff, Peter. And I know what you and I, we can geek out on bike stuff for hours.
Probably not. Be here to sleep. Whoever else might be listening.
Yeah, but anyway, that's it's going to wrap it up for us today. Next week, Wednesday night on Swoops World Late Night, Ian Blackburn, who is a sommelier and is really big in the wine tasting world. He'll be here in studio, and we'll do some wine tasting.
Cool.
And followed by Xene of the band X will be joining us. And next week on Primetime is Stella Ursula will be joining us. So we want everybody to have a wonderful, safe, and enjoyable weekend. We thank you once again for tuning in and all the support. And until then, good day, all.
Good day.
The views and opinions expressed by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Talk Story Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.